Thank you for joining us again for another informative episode of Satellite Nation. Satellite Nation is a weekly call-in show geared towards the hobby side of all things television. Brought to you by Satellite Guys Radio. Now here are your hosts, Michael and Brian.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the return of Satellite Nation. We're finally back after a brief hiatus. I am glad to be back, and we're here. My name is Michael, K-E-4-E-S-T, and with the show coming back, I'm going to have a new co-host. I think everybody knows him by his name. He goes by Titanium on Satellite Guys. I think everybody knows he's Brian Gohl. He's the owner of Titanium Satellite in California. He's been in the industry several years. He's got a vast knowledge on a lot of this stuff. So I'm happy to have him here on the show as a permanent fixture, as a co-host. And so, Brian, take you over there and tell everybody what you think. And are you happy to be here, or you feel like somebody just prodded you along?
Well, thanks for inviting me to be on the show with you there, Michael. Been in satellite for just a few years, since about 1981. And, you know, going from the big dish heyday, uplinking on various trucks as a satellite uplinker, you know, coming full route to working in the television, film, and television industry for many years as a director of photography and steady cam operator, and now back in satellite business. Back in the satellite business full time for about 12 years now, and just have worn quite a few hats over the years. Everything from television production, film and video cameras, worked on movies, played with every bit of technology that ever came along. So I think that's what we need when we participate in shows like this, is to wear many, many hats.
That's true, and that's one reason I approached you about being a co-host, because of everything that you've done. And, you know, you're not just specialized in one area. And I know people like that. That's just, they can do the best at building a roof, but when it comes to building a foundation, they just look at you and, how can they do this part, but they can't do that part? But so what brought you back into full-time in the satellites? What got that going? Was it just a passion of yourself, or did something trigger that?
Well, maybe a lot of people have read the story. I had a little thing in Telesatellite magazine a couple years ago. Basically, I was a satellite technician taking care of the distribution of data for some Fortune 500 companies down in Florida. And I was out on the job, and the lightning hit the telephone pole next to where I was working. Lightning passed through me on the way to finding a good ground. Luckily, I wasn't the best conduit, and so the equipment I was working on was also grounded. So ended up being in the hospital for about 2.5 months and had a pacemaker put in. So having a pacemaker put in, you can't work around RF transmission equipment because it would kick the pacemaker in. So that kind of got me out of the satellite industry for a number of years on the uplink. During that time, I always had a passion for satellite reception. Family members, friends, everybody wanted me to work on their system. And so, through the years, I stayed involved doing satellite installs, doing service calls for people, and really just staying in touch with really what I enjoy the most, and that's the satellite industry.
So you just went from there and ran with it. So now you owned Satellite AV. Now, did you come into that company? Did you start that company? And where did Glory Star come in on that part?
Well, back in about 2000, I was doing a lot of satellite installs for people who were wanting to watch 3ABN and other faith-based programming. And so I was advertising in a local publication that serviced Portland and Seattle up in the Northwest. And more people were calling me to install and do service work on their systems. Well, one of the broadcasters saw my ad in this publication and contacted me and asked me if I would be interested in providing equipment for them, because their satellite equipment provider had increased their price considerably. And he asked me, well, can you make a good living selling at the price that you do? And I said, yes, sure can. And so they asked me to submit a bid. So that's really how it was originally called Adventist Satellite. I started that up in my house up in Portland, Oregon, and with the intention of just installing locally. And then it it took off to be a provider of equipment nationwide. And then came down to California after talking to my my nephew. And he had a company that that serviced Apple. And it was kind of one of these things where I needed the infrastructure to grow the company, because suddenly they said, well, we don't want you just to provide equipment. We want you to provide sales, support, and ship the equipment. And suddenly I realized, boy, that's a lot bigger than I'm going to be running out of my house. And so came down to California and started the company down here, doing the distribution for one faith-based Christian channel called the Hope Channel. And then from there, the company grew. We took on additional faith-based broadcasters. We realized that really the success of the company was going to be not relying on other companies to provide equipment for us, but to go out and source our own equipment and develop it the way that we needed it to be, so it'd be reliable and good performance, and take out the need for the customer support to update channels every time a new channel came along. And so that's how GloryStar was then formed. Satellite AV was the company that imported the equipment and made it available for Adventist Satellite and for GloryStar customers. And then the excess was, I realized, was very good free-to-air equipment. And so that excess equipment basically was then made available for regular free-to-air folks to use in their systems.
Well, cool. So that's how it kind of got into the free-to-air market then from that.
Correct.
Wondering that.
Yeah, and back in 2004, came down to California, and that's really where the company grew very large. Last year, I ended my time at the helm of the company and set out to do Titanium Satellite. And Titanium Satellite really comes from my interest in developing unique equipment that kind of fits a niche part of our hobby. You know, there's things that I concentrate on for developing is really things that don't exist anywhere else in the market. Really, my passion is developing and providing customer service for folks. And so I've kind of gotten back into really what attracted me into the industry to start with, is the, you know, kind of playing with the equipment, figuring out what it can do and what can we do better and what could we use as hobbyists that doesn't already exist on the market.
I've always wanted one of these, and now I'm going to see if we can develop that and make that.
But it doesn't always happen that way. You know, a lot of times, I thought, oh, wouldn't it be neat if we came up with a way of a line in a C-band LMBF so we knew it was right in the middle of the dish. So I solicited all this information and worked with a guy on the forum, on Satellite Guys forum, who was very good at CAD design. We came up with the design, and then it came down to the time to source out the molds, and suddenly it was like, okay, well, how many of these would we sell, and how much is it going to cost? And you know, it came down to the mold cost would have added somewhere around $20 per unit for the first 1,000 units sold. So, you know, a lot of the times you have these great ideas, but then when it really comes down to implementing it, you realize that possibly you don't have the market, and, you know, something in the distribution and the manufacturing has to change in order for that product to make it into market. So right now I'm looking at Amazon just recently announced that they're going to do 3D printing for folks. And so I'm thinking about taking this design and I've already talked with folks over at Amazon. They have a copy of the CAD file, and they're going to give a bid back to see if it could be competitive for, you know, folks to order, and then Amazon just prints it out for them when they place the order.
That's something I'd like to have as a 3D printer maybe one day. But it's one of those things, it's a toy, you know, to me right now, because I couldn't justify the cost to have it to sit there just to play with once in a while to churn
out. Plus, there's such a difference in the quality. You know, some units make something that, you know, is made out of nice, smooth, you know, the resolution's very high and the product is not brittle. Other units, it really is something that you drop it and it's busted. And or, you know, the resolution, the finish is very rough, and it's nothing that you'd want to hold in your hand, let alone have two parts fit together, you know, finally and work. So,
right.
So, you know, I looked at, you know, purchasing one myself and manufacturing them here, but the cost of an individual item and the time that it takes to make it, you know, you really, the ones that are going to sit on your desk and my desk are not the quality at this point, but I think we're gonna see some real changes in the next couple of years.
Oh yeah, I do too. I've done some research myself and looked at them, and I think it's going to get there like anything else. At one point, you'll have something that you can have on your desk to do stuff like that. That's got a higher quality and better resolution to it. Uh-huh. But I've even watched some YouTube videos, and but yeah, sometimes unless you just got a big manufacturing plant set up with machine shops. Yeah, I guess if you're that rich on all that, you don't care. You're out on the beach somewhere.
But, you know, I've been listening to the show, and I know you through Satellite Guys, but really I don't know about much about you as a person. Care to tell me and the viewer and the listeners a little bit about yourself? Are you married? Do you have kids? Where you live?
I am married. I have 5 children. Been married, oh, I don't know, a few years.
Enough years to have 5 kids. So what are the ages of your kids?
Oh, let's see. We got 5, 4, one just turned 3, one getting ready to turn 2, and one is 3 months.
Congratulations.
Yeah. And then I turned the spigot off after that.
So where do you live?
I'm in the very far western part of North Carolina, right up against the Tennessee line, Georgia line. If you imagine North Carolina in your head, a map of it. I can be in Tennessee. Like, actually, the other day, we went to a football game for my oldest son, and it was in Tennessee where they was playing a scrimmage match. And after one game, we took, you know, go eat lunch, whatever. We went down to the next town, a little small town, and it was cross line in Georgia. But it was only like a 2-minute ride, you know. It's kind of interesting.
A little bit different when you live on the West Coast and, you know, California could take a day to drive across. So
right.
Kind of like Florida. When was the first time that you knew you were interested in electronics?
I would have to say 8 or 9 years old, something like that. I was the kid that I would get something like for Christmas, you know, a little boom box or something. And it wasn't maybe, I grew up in a very disciplined home, so it was like, oh, I get, as long as I can stand it, you know, try to keep it like it is. But as soon as the first month or so, I started getting scratches on it and beat up a little bit, I didn't. Went in Daddy's toolbox and found a screwdriver and had it apart to see what made it tick.
And did you get it put back together?
At first, nope. Nothing ever got put back together. And as I got older, you know, I'd get up to, you know, my preteen and early teens, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to take this apart, and I'm going to do something different to it, and I'm going to put it back together, and it's going to do something different. And that didn't work out either, but I didn't know what in the world any of them things was inside of it. But
well, evidently, because you go by KE4EST, on Satellite Guys, that tells us that you're an amateur radio operator.
That's true. I've been an extra class amateur radio operator for 22 years.
22 years. When, wow.
Yeah, I was back at the tail end of, you know, before they turned shut the code off. Now, you know, used to you had to have code, and then they went from code to having a where you all out, and then they went to multiple choice. So they give you 10 multiple choice questions. They'd say, what was the guy's city he lived in, you know, if you listen to the code, and they'd give you 4 answers, you know. If you had enough scribble there to make it out, you usually could get the answer. But my accident right before that, then they went my choice, and then they finally dropped the code altogether. But I am actually a code carrying extra. Very I had cool. to do the 20 word minute.
So, you know, times have changed. Every kid has a smartphone, Facebook, Twitter, blah, 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 blah. Why should people be interested in amateur radio at this time? I mean, has technology moved past amateur radio?
I don't think so. No, I heard a lot of people say that, and I say that for this reason. Everything's just, you know, say back when I was a kid. Now, we can go further than that. It's a little bit different story, but there was still a lot of stuff. You know, you go to the store and buy stuff. It wasn't 100 years ago where people were starting to make, you know, fill the stuff in their house because you couldn't go buy it. But even though we got all this stuff now and the technology's changed, things have got, you know, it's all different. It's still, you know, something makes it tick inside, something makes it work, and it's, there's no real difference there. So, except for it's just changed a little bit. So it's still a challenge to go in and learn how electronics work and how radio waves work. And it's still a thrill. Yeah, I can get on the Skype and, or Yahoo Voice or whatever, and I can get on the computer and talk to somebody in Africa. It's still, you know, it's kind of a closed system, you know, with disciplines and everything. But when you get on a radio antenna you made yourself and you stick up, you know, on the roof or above your roof and actually key down that microphone and talk to somebody in Africa, it's a whole different feeling that you just can't explain until you've been through it.
So I haven't had my license. You know, I'm thinking about getting back into it, but why should I? I mean, maybe this is a challenge for me. Maybe over the course of the next couple months, next year, you know, maybe I'll go for my license, but why should I?
Well, with your background and stuff, I don't see why you're already not. But it's, you know, it's just the fun of it. It's the, you know, it ties electronics and radio and, you know, yapping. But there's so many different aspects to it. You don't have to get in front of a microphone and talk. You know, you still can do, you know, anything CW, and there's a lot of data going on that you can do, which is neat. And then you know you can talk to the space station, talk to astronauts. That it's just something you have to get the bug for, maybe sometimes, I don't know, but I don't really think that's it. Once you, it's just the challenging and the hobby of it, and it's just a, right. When you're the fun part of it. It's,
well,
just,
you know, I've been reading, and you probably are aware that there is a new magazine out there for amateur radio operators, the Spectrum Monitor.
Yep.
And
I don't subscribe yet, but I've looked at a couple of them.
Yeah, well, I subscribe, and I actually do some advertising on there of free-to-air equipment, because I thought probably some carryover of interest between amateur radio operators and the free-to-air equipment.
Yeah.
But you know, reading that has kind of rekindled my interest in amateur radio. So who knows? Maybe that will be something that we can talk about on a future show and get me, you know, give me information about where I can go to get licensed and what the process is, because it's really something that I'd be interested in doing again. But I basically, it's not really in front of all of us like it used to be. You know, we all used to have that neighbor up the street with the gigantic antenna that interfered with our television, and we knew every problem that was electronics was his.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But, you know, I'm interested in getting back into amateur radio, so maybe that could be a little segment that we talk about in the future about how people with electronic interests can get into amateur radio and how it's really changed over the last couple of years.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely could do that. You know, and it does go hand in hand a lot. There's a lot of guys you'll find on, like, satellite guys in a lot of the forums and stuff that's in free-to-air that are amateur radio operators. And some of them's more, you know, they won't use their call sign or whatever because, you know, it's easy to look up their address or whatever. But they, and sometimes they don't come out and say it, but if you ask them or you'll get to, you can just tell by reading some of their posts and stuff, like, yep, that guy's a ham, that's a ham.
Agreed.
A lot of them are.
Well, back to my,
I'd say 75%.
Back to my list. I was going to ask you, a lot of electronics out there right now, and you and I have been talking about electronics that we want to cover here in upcoming shows. What's your favorite electronic item that's out right now?
That'd be hard to say. I like so many different things. I don't know if I could really pinpoint it down. I guess smartphones and these smartwatches, as far as technology right now, is, if that takes off really good, that's with the smartwatches, I think that'll be, some people say, I don't think they'll take, but I think it will, because instead of having the Bluetooth things taking your ear all the time, you know, which you still might want to use. You can have your phone in your pocket and you have the watch and you just look at your wrist, glance at your wrist.
Heck, we all want to look like Dick Tracy, of course.
Right. Exactly. Okay. Instead of, you see everybody walking around with zombies staring at their phones, now you just stare at your watch.
Oh, yeah, that's going to make a big difference. Okay. So what is your least favorite electronic item right now?
I'd say probably 3D TV.
Sounds like you got suckered into buying one.
Yeah, and it's I don't know. It's not there. They ain't got it perfected enough to whatever. That's just
so. How many 3D channels are you getting now?
Zero.
Sorry about that. Anyway,
well, I think Ultra HD's got a better chance of making it than that does.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm kind of joining midstream here. Satellite Nation started about a year ago, and why don't you just kind of bring us up to date? What is the history of Satellite Nation?
Okay, me and Dave Wallace, let's see, was it Wally HTS on Satellite Guys? He, the owner of, he's got that gotcband.com, and we was talking, I guess, a year and a half ago, something like that, maybe a little more than a year and a half ago, about, you know, starting some kind of a talk show up or something about electronics or free-to-air or something. And we just kind of batting it back and forth, and it was kind of off and on. And then one day we mentioned it to Scott, the owner of Satellite Guys, and because he had mentioned something briefly in a post or something about, because he had Satellite Guys radio before. He had briefly mentioned something about it. So we went in and sent him a PM and said, hey, you know, what about, you know, doing it again, you know, to hopefully bring him in to say, hey, let's bring Satellite Guys Radio back. You know, somebody's got interest in it, of doing a show or something. Maybe, you know, he would do it. And he's like, yeah, let's do this, you know. So we started up, and it was kind of rough at first, and it had its rough moments, but we stuck to it every week. We did it for a little over a year. And then we just ran into a couple of problems here and there and whatever. And so we decided to kind of just, let's just shut it off for a little while and regroup and redo everything. And so here we are now. Now we're back.
So what do you see as the future for Satellite Nation then?
My hopes in the future is I'd like it to get bigger and bigger and bigger and become something that's, you know, out there that's known nationwide more than just, you know, a few people here and there know it or whatever. It's something that's
more mainstream.
Right. I have a lot more mainstream where people, you know, I may even have a channel somewhere where people, you know, I got to listen to the show every week, you know, it's coming on. And somehow, you know, evolve it into that where it keeps everybody's interest in, you know, all sorts of different areas and not just one. It's called Satellite Nation, but I don't want it to be just about, you know, free to air talk every week, you know.
Yep.
I want to bring all technology into it, and anything new comes out that's noteworthy, you know, bring, you know, just research it and talk about it and our opinion on it.
Right. You know, something that led up to tonight's show and the reason that we're kind of starting the show off this way, you and I were talking about what our visions were for the show, what we want to do. And really what we're trying to do tonight is kind of lay a foundation or a ground floor so people know who you and I are, what our backgrounds are, what our interests are, and kind of engage them to participate to be their show. You and I have talked about, we have identified a lot of products. I've talked to quite a few people that I have worked with in the past in the industry, uplinkers, engineers, equipment designers, manufacturers, service providers. And, you know, the goal here is that we're going to get some of these key people who are out there developing things, the things that we use now, the things that we're going to use tomorrow, the people that are thinking way outside of the box, bring those people in and learn about, you know, what makes them tick? What do they see as the future for electronics?
Yeah, exactly.
And so, you know, I know tonight we're kind of just talking between you and I, but I really thought that it was important moving forward that people kind of understood that, you know, what our interests are and kind of what brought us, both of us, to this point in the industry.
Right. Exactly. That's why we did this, you know, because we didn't want to. You know, we could have started out, and I think it would have been okay with the first show, with the interviewing somebody or whatever. But, I think we need to have this show to, and a lot of people know, but a lot of people don't know who we are. So we need to have this show to introduce ourselves and what is our goals. And that's it, you know, bring people in here that's looking 10 years down the road and that's on the forefront and see what their ideas are and see what they're seeing and, and push it forward. It's going to keep, things going, I think,
Yeah.
We'll have, a segments, with let's go back to 1914, 100 years ago, and talk about how things were then sometimes. But for the most part, we're going to, it's a technology show. And that's the goal.
But like you were saying before, it's those toasters we tore apart as kids that really, electricity still flows the same way.
Exactly.
The resistors are smaller, the capacitors are smaller. Now they're grouped onto little ICs, but it's still exactly the same thing. And, electricity is either going to make radiation or in heat or RF or something. It's going to dissipate somehow. And we just need to learn how to control it.
Yeah, and chips still run off smoke.
Really? What do you mean? I'm joking. Yeah, every time something smokes, it quits working, so it must run on smoke,
yep.
Right?
That was my conclusion when I was a kid. It's got to be smoke in there running this thing.
Well, you and I have known each other for quite some time on Satellite Guys, so I'm going to give you one opportunity to ask me a question that you don't know about me. Okay, time's up.
Oh, gosh, Brian, let's see. Well, a couple of things I do know about you, but you can tell. Are you married and have any kids? And
Well, yes, I'm married about 1 year now.
Time is flying.
I was married years and years ago, and got a divorce over 20 years ago, have a beautiful daughter. She just got married last weekend up in near Bremerton, Washington. And so that kind of was a delay for getting the show going because there actually is a little planning to put into a wedding, I found out. And so back from the wedding. And I'm married to a wonderful woman. Her name is Lynn. And kind of an interesting thing. She's helping me out every once in a while here at the office. And, I think she thinks I'm as crazy as everybody else thinks I am. And the wonderful thing is she tolerates it and encourages it. So, boy, I'm a lucky guy.
Yeah. That is awesome. And you have some, that's what you need. You got to have somebody behind you, backing you and stuff. You mentioned the pacemaker. I didn't know you had a pacemaker.
I don't anymore. Yeah, I'm one of those few people. About 12 years ago, when the testing, they can tell when the battery's starting to get weak, and it was either going to be to the point where it's replaced, and I just put it out to my cardiologist. I said, well, what if you tested me to see if I even need it? Because I don't really feel the pacemaker kicking on anymore. And he kind of looked at me and says, well, usually we don't remove pacemakers. People are buried with them.
Yeah, right.
And so I said, well, could you, kind of check with your colleagues and see if maybe you could take it out? And so they ran a bunch of tests on me. And he said, well, your heart has healed enough that at this point we see that there's a small problem, but we wouldn't consider putting a pacemaker in. So he said, I'm willing to remove it. And this will be my first time ever removing a pacemaker. So I came out and I was waking up and still kind of groggy in the recovery room. But I still remember him walking in and he said, well, we left the wires in just in case we need to jumpstart you. Very funny.
Wow, yeah. Wow.
So that's
taking that.
So now, I can work around the flyback transformers on CRTs. We don't work on those anymore. Well, in theory, I could work around the RF transmitters and everything, but I'm on the reception end now.
Yeah, that's another thing. You see, now you can get the pacemaker. You can get your ham license. You play with some high wattage and stuff and not worry about it. I've got RF burns before playing around with that stuff. And, you know, it's before I knew anything, you know, enough about what I should be holding a wire while the transmitter's keyed up. But.
Oh, I mean, enough capacitors have bit me and thrown me, thrown my hands in the air. So I respect very large capacitors. So.
Oh, yeah.
Well, looks like we're about halfway through the show right now. Should we throw it to a short intermission and we'll come back and we'll do some tech talk?
Let's do it.
Find Satellite Nation on Facebook.com/Satellite Nation Radio. This is Satellite Nation Radio.
Join us here live every Wednesday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific for another exciting episode of Satellite Nation. Satellite Nation is a live, one-hour weekly call-in radio show about the technology that we love. Every week, Satellite Nation features top industry news, interviews with the people and companies behind the products and services that change the world. Listen live to Satellite Nation for the inside scoop on the products and technology that we use every day. Meet and talk with the dreamers, innovators, developers of yesterday's, today's, and tomorrow's technologies. Satellite Nation airs here on Satellite Guys Radio and on Access America Radio Network on Satellite Galaxy 19. Tune in every Wednesday night live at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Like us on Facebook. Let us know what you want to talk about, because it's your Satellite Nation.
Thank you.
It is now time for the Tech Corner. If you would like your question answered on the Tech Corner, please post your question on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Satellite Nation Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the second half of Satellite Nation. I'm Brian.
And I'm Michael.
And we're back with you. So now we're going to be doing a tech segment. So quite often people are rescuing 1 meter dishes and 1.2 meter dishes from the tops of businesses. Maybe it's a an old music dish, or maybe it's an internet dish, or even an old Primestar dish.
Yeah, that's the.
These are good quality dishes made out of composite materials, and they're really a quality dish and worth rescuing. Where do you hear people are rescuing these dishes?
All over the place. There's still Primestar dishes I know of. Driving down the road, going to places around here, you can spot them a mile away once you know what you're looking for. But there's places I can still see them.
Now these dishes, these dishes are best for fixed. They're heavy, and so if you do motorize them, they really would need a very large motor to motorize them. So typically people will use these for a fixed dish. In fact, when I moved into my new office here, guess what I found up on the roof? A 1 meter old Muzak dish. So it was sitting there unused. So guess what I'm using it for now?
What you got on 103?
I have it on 103. Yeah. With the odd offset skew on that bird. And so, I have my motorized dish, and then I have this one fixed on that. So, a 1 meter dish or 1.2 meter dish made out of composite materials. You know, these things may be old. Some of them might be getting a little sunburnt, a little ugly, but that surface is still very accurate, very good.
Well, if I get one of these, you think I should leave what comes with on it for the L&B and the feed horn, or should I just go to eBay and order me a new L&B and put on it, or L&BF?
Well, this question's asked quite a bit on the forums, and really, you're best off if you do keep the original scaler and feed horn on this unit. Do you know the reason why?
Because it's matched to the reflector surface.
Right, exactly. So,
well, not the surface, but...
Well, the shape and
right.
the focal distance of that dish. So the feed horn that is mounted on it, for example, some of the dishes are oval shaped. Some of them are oblong. Some of them are perfectly round. So these commercial scalers and feed horns that are on these dishes, they're shaped to only illuminate the shape of the dish. Now, the reason that this is important is that if you are over-illuminating the dish, this means that your L&B is going to be receiving signals not only reflected off of the dish, but maybe even terrestrial interference or noise reflected off the earth or from a local RF source. This will be also entering your feed horn and going down the waveguide to your L&B. So we may be getting a little bit ahead of ourselves here, but I think the real important thing here is, when do I consider replacing the existing scaler, waveguide, feed horn, and L&B?
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. I replaced the L&B. I mean, it's 20 years old. Ain't it probably about shot? Are they still good after that many years?
A lot of them, you got to remember, these are high-quality commercial L&Bs that, are meant to last for years in very hostile environments. So the chances are that this L&B is still working very good.
So if it's just up on top of a gas station somewhere, it's in the middle of Nebraska, it's not a, unless it gets hit by a tornado, it's not a harsh environment, I guess, so.
Well, these things are built to last. So, the question that people often ask is, they are saying, okay, I'm looking on eBay, and this one on eBay says that it's a 0.1 dB in R. Wow, that must be good. Then they look on the L&B, if the label hasn't pulled off, that's on one of these Primestar or Channel Master dishes, and they look at that and it says, oh, this is a 0.8 dBNR. So, wow, that one on eBay must be better. So I should get better performance if I replace it with that. What do you think?
Well, I'll tell you what I think. I think...
Hey, wow, remember, this is a family show. Hold back a little bit here.
Let me tell you what I think about that. But I know exactly what's going on with that. That's marketing hype. And you know from experience more than I do, Brian, if you take one and put it on a bench and test it, you're not going to get down that low. And there's other factors to look at, too, besides the ratio, you know, so...
Exactly. So what are some of those other things that are important? I mean, a quality commercial LNB, what else are they going to take in consideration? It's the amount of gain, and it's the balance between the gain and the noise.
Right.
It's things like the phase. What is, you know, what's happening to the signal as it passes through the feed horn and enters the LNB? Why should this make any difference? I mean... What happens when the waves don't reflect properly? What do you think happens to the performance? Goes down.
It degrades.
Yeah, right. So, you know, things that when you're considering, should I go out and go on eBay and buy this 0.1 dBNR? Is it going to be better than the one that's on this commercial dish? Well, likely, like you pointed out, this is marketing BS 101.
Yeah.
So very frequently, the joke is, and I've shared this on forums before, is that when a buyer asks the factory or the engineers at the factory, well, what is this LNB rated? They'll say, well, what do you want us to print on it? So typically, most LNBs that we get from the factory, unless they're sorted, are going to be about a 0.6 to a 0.8 dB noise ratio NR. So anything below that is because the LNB is sorted, which means that it's more expensive. And, you know, it's all the way that they test them as well. So most of what we're seeing on eBay is just marketing hype. Most of these LNBs don't even come close to a 0.1. And way beyond that, the performance, you know, these are just off the shelf. They bought them. They're selling them. They'll print anything on them to sell them. So just discount that one. Let's now look at, is there going to be a performance difference? I mean, this LNB that's on there is 0.8. What else should I consider? Well, the number one reason that I would replace an LNB that's on one of these dishes with something else is polarity switching. So a lot of these dishes up there that are being rescued from commercial applications have a single polarity output. So when you have a single polarity output, the only way you can change polarity is by doing what? Rotating the LNB. So not too practical when you're switching between horizontal and vertical channels down in the comfort of your house to have a single output LNB up on the roof be fixed to the opposite polarity that you want to watch. So we do know that some of these dishes did have dual polarity. Do you know which ones those probably are?
PrimeStar.
And not all the PrimeStar. So these PrimeStar dishes, what you know, you look at them and typically they had two outputs on the back. So there was a large LNB on those that was kind of looked like a soda can.
Yeah, yeah.
And they had two outputs on them, and they were labeled as your polarity. So if you have one of those on it, boy, I wouldn't change a thing. I would just get a multi-switch so you can switch between horizontal and vertical using your receiver and just use the LNB that's already hooked up to that feed horn. Now, there are other LNBs out there that you can swap out that do have a voltage switch polarity. One that comes to mind is the Invicom, QPF series of Invicom.
Right.
Those don't have a feed horn on it, but they do bolt up to a feed horn. And they operate off of voltage polarity switching from the receiver. And so you don't have to...
Exactly.
You don't have to do anything else other than just replace that LMB. Now, what is the final thing that you could do here? You probably noticed that I posted something up on Satellite Guys a couple of weeks ago about a little experiment that I had done.
Yeah, you could do your own Frankenstein way, if you want to put it that way. You could bring out the inner ham inside of you. And
Well, I brought out the inner hacksaw.
There you go.
And so what I did was I just took an LMB, a PLL LMB, a good quality one, and I just sawed off the scaler, and the feed horn diameter was exactly the same as on the 1 meter dish on my roof. And so I took some trusty silicon glue and lined up my horizontal and vertical polarity probes inside with the 0 and 90 degree markings on the feed horn scaler. Silicone glued it on. Very Frankenstein. But guess what? It worked pretty good. Yep. So my dish up on the roof right now has a Frankenstein, thank you very much, Michael, a Frankenstein siliconed LMBF that I cut off the feed horn, the scaler. So basically made it a dual polarity LMB that is glued on with silicone to the feed horn. So that's a poor man's adaptation, but man, it's working pretty darn good, Michael.
Yeah, that's what I heard you say, or heard. Yeah, I heard you. Seen you post it, that it was working really good, and that's pretty cool. I've done similar to the same thing before with stuff. I took an LMBF, you know, and cut off part of it with the hacksaw, stuck it up to it, and just to get it to work, and I've done all kinds of things like that. That's pretty neat.
Yep, and I really enjoy on the different forums reading about guys who aren't afraid to get out a hacksaw and a soldering iron and a you have guys gluing mirrors onto the surface of dishes to see where they reflect. Have a guy out of Europe who's been posting up, who made his own sub-reflector. And, you think about the performance of that, where it gathers, all the signal that's normally not hitting in the sweet spot of the LMBF. And then it's a sub-reflector that then confines it and focuses it even more, and so even increased gain. Very fascinating. This guy fashioned it all by himself and a friend in a machine shop. Some very talented guys out there.
Yeah, I took you see the that's not real old, but it's a few years old now, the Wild Blue dishes. Mm-hmm. They were like that. And I took one of those one time. I said, I wonder if this will work. And I took just off the shelf, cheap LMBF. I took that, left the other one on there, but did a lot of measuring. So I'm because that's the key thing, get that focal or get the everything lined up perfectly. If you are going to change out what was there, the exact same spot that it was where the other one was.
And that ties back into what we were talking about earlier. If you are going to replace the existing scaler and feed horn, it is extremely important, if you still have the original on there and you've decided you want to swap it out for a off-the-shelf LMBF, that you measure exactly the height and the angle that the LMBF is placed aimed into the reflector. If you don't place that LMB, the center of the LMB feed horn in the exact position, that means you're going to have to increase or decrease the elevation. And guess what? You're not going to be reflecting all of the satellite signal in there, and you will lose satellite signal if you don't put it in the exact spot. And we call that the sweet spot, where all the signals are reflected off of the surface of the LMB and focused into the right into the central port of the feed horn.
That's exactly right. That's what you got to do, and you can't just stick it up there and start messing with it. You can.
You
trial
can.
And error, but save you a lot of time. And
why reinvent the wheel, right?
Exactly. What's already there, just do all the measurements and fashion something
now
in the exact same spot.
Also, this also ties into people that want to use these dishes to be a micro bud or a mini bud. So you are going to be taking off the original KU band feed horn and scaler, and you're going to be replacing that with a most likely a C-band LMBF. Now, very important that you know exactly where the original LMBF, the center of that LMBF is, because if you install your C-band LMBF higher or lower, that means you're not going to be collecting all of the signal that that small reflector is focusing. And so you are going to lose signal, a good amount of your signal, if you do not put that C-band LMBF exactly the center of the feed horn in the exact position as the Ku-band LMB feed horn that you're removing.
Oh, yeah. Very important. I've seen a lot of guys post up and actually had people call me on the phone or whatever and ask questions. And actually had one friend I went, but, you know, they'll, I want to change this out. I'm going to do this. So I put this on there. I'm like, well, was this exactly the spot? And they just look at you. Well, I don't know. So, you know, right off, they didn't measure it. And,
well, and it so kind of, it also, even when you're swapping between different mounts have different heights on them. I remember some testing that Joe over at Fridge FTA did when he first got the C1 PLL, and he was comparing it against another LMB, and he wasn't getting the same performance. And then suddenly he realized that the mount that we provide with the conical scaler on the C1 PLL was slightly shorter than the one that he was using on the other LMB. And so he used some washers and a longer bolt to shim it up so the LMBF, the center of the feed horn, was sitting at the exact same height. Then it performed wonderfully. So something that even those of us who play around get caught once in a while when we forget the basics of geometry reflection.
Boy, that's happened to me several times. You get overconfident that you've done it so many years and so many times, and then you're like, oh, why didn't I knew I could get it right, but I guess, then you got to start all over and go back to square one. But,
well,
and then it goes, in 10 minutes, you're done, you know?
Yep. Isn't that the truth? Well,
yeah.
In the future, we're going to be taking listeners' questions. So if you have a technical question or just something that you want to have featured on a future show, come check us out on Facebook. Come to facebook.com/Satellite Nation Radio. So facebook.com/Satellite Nation Radio. And come on there. Like us after the show. Come on there and just like us, participate, give us questions. Let us know what you want to hear on this show.
Yeah, I want to hear comments and stuff for future shows and, you know, ideas and, you know, and we'll be very interactive on there. You're going to post some questions or post comments, whatever. We'll try, you know, we're around a computer most of the day, and we got our smartphones on us, and we'll reply and take a lot of stuff into consideration, you know, because it's for everybody, you know.
Yep.
This is your show, and we're just running it. So you tell us what you want to hear.
Now, on future shows, let's go ahead, and as long as they're writing down our facebook.com/Satellite Nation Radio link, let's also have them write down how they can call us. So they can call toll-free 877-SAT-GUYS. That's 877-728-4897. Now, on this show tonight, we're not taking any live calls. But in future shows, just have this written down, because this is your show, and we're going to be taking your calls, we're going to be getting your input, and this is going to be your show. So we're going to listen to what you want to talk about, and we're going to get the people on there that you want to talk with. We're going to talk about the subjects that you want to talk about, and we're going to be answering your tech questions. So go ahead, check us out on Facebook.com, and also give us a call on future shows. We're talking about doing some future shows at other, not just sitting at our computers in our offices. What are we checking out to do?
And we're going to hit CES and promise any live shows, but we're going to try to at least get some interviews off the floor.
We're not going to try. We are going to get some fantastic interviews off the floor.
There you go.
So at CES, once again, leading up to CES, you know, we're going to be participating on Satellite Guys Forum. We're going to be also be checking out the Facebook pages. So if there's anybody that you want interviewed, I know that a couple other radio shows are going to be there as well. And we're going to be all working in together to interview as many people and find as many interesting products as possible at CES. And that's in January. We're also going to be at the Satellite Exhibition 2015 in Washington, D.C. That's going to be March 16th through 19th. So we're going to be, this is more of a commercial show. This is a show that has a lot of not just you know, consumer electronics, but specific electronics for the satellite industry. So we're going to be there doing interviews with engineers, equipment manufacturers. So it should be a really great time, and we want our listeners to, you know, let us know, check out their pages. Also going to be going over to ANGA in Germany, Cologne, Germany. So going to be going over there, and depending on the political climate, may be over at CABSAT as well. But that one's kind of up in the air whether we're going to be there or not.
That's going to be very exciting. Looking very forward to that.
Well, there's a couple places where people can listen to us. So you're listening to us on Satellite Guys Radio. So we're going to be live here every Wednesday evening, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. How else will people listen to us?
You can listen to us on G19. And you got the frequency of that wrote down over there.
I sure do. Yeah, we're going to be carried on the Access America Radio Network, which is available on streaming, and also on Galaxy 19, G19 KU band. So if you have a KU setup aimed at Galaxy 19, the transponder frequency is 12115. And for those of you who don't know about Access America is a radio station that carries Access America satellite radio on Wednesdays, but the rest of the week they play a lot of good old music, and Ralph does a great show over there, and that station, it's great to have them back up on Galaxy 19.
Yeah, excellent people.
Now also we're going to be promoting other radio shows, so Sputnik Radio with Dave. He also is here on Satellite Guys and also on Access America. So I know Access America, the radio show, is going to be taking a brief hiatus through the rest of the summer, but they're going to be back this fall. But Sputnik Radio is also heard on Access America, here on Satellite Guys Radio as well, and on G19. So it's a great time. There's three satellite and consumer electronic shows up for folks to listen to now.
Yeah, plenty of stuff, and that's very exciting to have all this going on and getting people back into it more. And I think that's what we need. Because I keep hearing the same old thing, and before we, as we start getting ready to start closing out here, let me ask you this question. Brian, is free-to-air dead, or is it dying? Is it going to be dead in another year?
No, it isn't. And by the way, we are out of time, so I'm going to invite everybody back next Wednesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, here on this station at this same time, and catch us live. Give us a call. We look forward to hearing from you.
Good night, everybody.
Take care. Bye-bye now.
Thanks to all that tuned in tonight. Join Satellite Guys Michael and Brian next Wednesday for another informative episode of Satellite Nation. And don't forget to like our page at facebook.com/Satellite Nation Radio. Until next week, good night.